702. 702. On 92.7 and 106 FM. Streaming on 702.co.za, the 702 app, and on DSTV channel 856.
Coming up to exactly 9 minutes past 6 o'clock, Ray in for Bruce on The Money Show, which is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that gives you expert solutions for your transactional banking needs. That's Afghanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. So, coming up in your program this evening, looking shortly at the PIC report, so much has gone wrong there. Sort of having a taking a closer look at that. The markets begin to claw back some of this week's losses. Chatting to Tata Mashiho of Sanlam Private Wealth about this. I say claw back, but sort of losses at the end again. Later on, I'll be looking at the best bits of The Money Show. And you need to pay attention because it's a brutal biz quiz every Friday. That's when I'll ask you a series of questions. And if you are the last person standing, you are the winner of the week. And what a week it's been. Bloodbaths on the JSC. So I'd like to hear from you. If you'd like to give me a call, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. You can also send me a message on 31702 or 31567.
702. 702 for the curious. On 92.7 and 106 FM.
The other big story of the week, apart from the bloodbaths on the markets, the long-awaited reports of the Public Investment Corporation has finally been released, and it's damning. For many years, there were allegations against former CEO Dan Majila, Sikhunjala's Iqbal Survey, Steinhoff, and others. And these rumors went around. These allegations went around. Then finally, they decided to have this commission of inquiry, and the report from that commission of inquiry has now come out. On the line is journalist at the Daily Maverick, Ray McClarker. Hi, Ray. Good evening and welcome to The Money Show.
Good evening, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Right. Almost 1,000 pages, but some names come up time and time again, don't they?
Absolutely. And, I guess this report, it finally confirms suspicions that were held by so many people about improprieties at the PIC. Some of the big names that have emerged out of the report is Dr. Dan Majila, the CEO, former CEO and CIO at the same time of the PIC, and the acting CFO, Matepa More, who, along with Dan Majila, were known as the sort of two centers of power at the PIC because they had enormous influence and power to, I guess, unilaterally approve various transactions at the PIC that have since soured. Then there's, Dr. Iqbal Survey, the businessman who owns Independent Media, which owns several media titles in South Africa. And I guess the biggest finding is that investment decisions of the PIC were concluded on the basis of Dr. Dan Majila's friendship with Iqbal Survey and not the investment merits of any particular investment decisions. So these findings are quite damning. I mean, the PIC, the chair of the inquiry, rather, Judge Lexan Party, actually has referred some of these findings to be further probed through a forensic investigation, and to refer some of the findings to the NPA for criminal prosecutions of these individuals. So this is quite a damning report from all fronts.
It's so interesting because AO Technologies, and just hearing what you're saying there, throughout, I think it was December, reading the Star newspaper, and the Star newspaper is under the stable of Dr. Iqbal Survey, and the article kind of read that he had been cleared, and up until now, Dr. Iqbal Survey said he is innocent. We had the book Paper Tiger coming out, which said he's certainly not innocent. What exactly did this report have to say about AO Technologies? Let's clear this up once and for all.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to go back to discuss the terms of the deal. So the PIC subscribed for about a 29% shareholding in AO back into December 2017 ahead of its JSC listing. And, to buy that stake, it basically paid about 4.3 billion rand. And the value of the shares were priced at about 43 rand a share. Today, the shares are priced at about 2 rand 38. So, the PIC has lost a lot of money through this transaction because, the value of the company at the time it listed in 2017 was 15 billion rand. Today, it's about 819 million rand or so. Sure. So you know, proper processes were not followed with this transaction, first of all. It seems like Dr. Dan Majila unilaterally approved the PIC's investment into this transaction, and therefore binding the PIC in this AO transaction. And in this process, Dr. Dan Majila excluded his colleagues at the PIC, including a team that normally does due diligence on investment decisions and opportunities as well. So you know, that's the main finding basically against Majila, that he did not meet you know, the proper qualities, and he wasn't honest as well, by the way, throughout this transaction, which means that he compromised his fiduciary role as a senior executive within the PIC.
Because it wasn't just AO Technologies, it was also Steinhoff and also other deals.
Absolutely. I mean, Steinhoff, there was a BE vehicle called, Lancaster, which bought shares into Steinhoff. That is, you know, before Steinhoff's implosion. So the Lancaster Group was owned by Jayendra Naidu, who is a businessman who was a trade unionist with links to COSATU. But that investment soured after Steinhoff announced the accounting fraud, basically, back in December. So the initial funding request in that transaction was 10.4 billion rand, but this was reduced, to about 9 billion rand. So Dr. Dan Majila would not seek the approval of his other colleagues, because as the CEO of the PIC, he had the power to approve by himself, you know, investments that reached a particular threshold. So because it was reduced to 9 billion rand from the initial 10 billion rand, that gave Dr. Dan Majila a lot of leeway and room to approve this transaction as well. So these are very serious allegations against Dr. Dan Majila.
There are, Ray, because there are no sort of checks and balances there. You can't have one person deciding on deals and what, more than a trillion rand in this investment fund. It just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't, Ray, at all. And, you know, and I think one of the important points that have emerged from this report is that Dr. Dan Majila was a powerful force within the PIC. He had the role of the CEO and CIO. Normally, in the private sector, those two roles are held by two different people. So the likes of Alan Gray, for example, the likes of Coronation Fund managers would have two different people occupying those roles. But because Dr. Dan Majila held those roles by himself, he had quite a concentration of power. And, that actually also gave him the power to intimidate and pressure some of his colleagues to approve investments that have since soured and would not normally pass the PIC's test of muster, if you like.
Now, from your vantage point, and I think one of the big things for South Africans is they want justice. Do you see this going clearly to the NPA, which I think it already has, but do you see this clearly that there will be prosecutions here?
That's such a million-dollar question.
Right? Yeah, no, it is. I'm throwing you under the bus a bit.
The NPA has a long queue and list of, transgressions that has to prosecute on. Listen, I spoke to Dr. Roel Khoza earlier on. He is the interim board chair of the PIC, and he says that they will pursue some of these, transgressions vigorously, that is. And I think Dr. Roel Khoza, is a credible individual. He's well respected. And so far there has been changes at the PIC since the board came in sometime last year. So I think it's anybody's guess, but it seems like the board is now, is reinvigorated, I guess, to really pursue these wrongdoings.
Journalist at the Daily Maverick, Ray McClarka, great to have you on The Money Show. Thank you.
Thanks, Ray.
702. SMS us now on 31702.
All right, two big stories this last week. That was the one. The other one, the stock markets have been a mess this week. In fact, yesterday, I cautiously backed away from my Reuters computer in disbelief. I've never seen so much red in my life before. Many traders also haven't seen this before. This includes some who have been trading for over two decades. I know we're chatting to David Shapiro from Sasfin, and he said he's never seen this before, and he's been there many, many, many years. There has been a global stock market rout this year, and this has gone down and gone down. The cause is twofold. It's called the two black swan events that have happened over the past week. On the line is CEO of Anchor Capital, Peter Armitage. Hi, Peter. Good evening. Welcome to The Money Show.
Good evening, Ray.
What a week. And I think the big thing is today we saw things bouncing back a little bit. Is this sort of the end of the storm, or do we just don't we know?
Sorry, these things tend to last a fair time. What's quite positive from a forward-looking perspective is that things have fallen quite sharply, quite quickly. So you can act with a little bit more certainty. The global markets are down about 25-26%. That's a big move. An extreme move is 35%. So you could well go down another 5 or 10%, but you know, you're then in regions where historically it's always been a good time to get back into equity markets. So we think from here it's been painful, but there is some money to be made.
But of course, traders wouldn't be selling off now. They wouldn't be panicking, like you say. They may be just holding back, thinking, don't worry, in 6 months' time we'll be back.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so, you know, where you want to get to. So, you know, let's say the market starts at 100, goes down to 70, and then comes back to 100. The focus is to try and emerge with that 100 being 110. You know, so we haven't felt the full brunt of the downside, and you want to be in the right shares on the upside. The world has changed dramatically over the course of the last 2 weeks, certainly in terms of people's expectations. There's the oil price and there's the coronavirus. Things have worsened a lot. So the market is pricing in a very, very poor scenario, and it might not be as bad. And it's just very different to the global financial crisis of 2008, where bank balance sheets were destroyed. Banks are what transmit central bank policy through to consumers. But ultimately, it took 10 years for those to be properly repaired. The coronavirus and oil impacts, we think, could well be transitory, and within 6 to 8 months, there'll be a memory. And some companies will be left with big damage. If you think of something like a cruise ship company, Royal Caribbean's down from $140 to $35. You know, they might be empty for 6 months and make massive losses. But most companies, I think of something like a Nike, has come off 25-30%. Great business. The earnings might be down a little bit this year as a result of what's happening, but they're the same business next year once we're through the system.
I'm thinking about insurance companies. I see the Cape Jazz Festival has now been cancelled. Insurance companies must be in trouble as well.
Yeah, so it's probably not as bad as, there's a kind of loss of profits type equation, but no really big event has happened that will result. You know, it's not as clear cut as a fire or a theft so there's a global scare and consumer demand has slowed down. Many instances, that's not really something that's insured.
Peter, at any point did you see this coming? Did traders see this coming? It was the perfect storm this week. Yesterday, I mean, the JSE dropping 10% and fast. I think it was the speed that got everybody. Did you see this coming? Did anyone sort of predict this?
No. I mean, that's why we called it two black swans. I mean, it was totally unpredictable that, you know, a Chinese guy eating a pangolin would result in Royal Caribbean cruises being cancelled 3 months later. So everybody said to, you know, the one upside is, I guess, the pangolin's been saved out of all of this because people won't want to eat them anymore. But, it was completely unpredictable. The oil price, the Russians decided to pull out of OPEC, and you saw the oil price go down $15, $20, 30% in no time at all. So we had in our offshore portfolios, the market was getting fairly expensive. So we'd moved into a little bit of cash, we'd taken a bit of profit, but that was nothing to do with being able to predict these uncertain events. So, you've got to look at the events, you've got to assess whether they have a short or a long-term or a permanent impact. And, it's also a big test of this kind of active-passive trend that's happened in the world. And if you picture people selling out of ETFs and passive funds, they're selling an index. So every single share gets sold. So what we get excited about as active managers is the quality shares have gone down in many instances as much as the companies where they've got balance sheet issues. So, you know, you can pick those up at, you know, we can pick up great companies at values 20, 30, 40% below where they were at their peak.
Yeah. In fact, I walked past somebody and I said to them, the markets have crashed. And he turned around and said, no, Ray, it's a sale. It's lovely. So I suppose you could make some cash.
Yeah, I mean, we always say, if you're in Edgar's and somebody screams, you know, shirts aren't 30% cheaper in the shirt department, people will go and buy them. Yeah. In the stock market, when it goes down 30%, people want to run for the hills. But we've had an interesting client experience where it's gone down so quickly, so sharply, that people are, everybody knows that you don't panic when the market's down this much, when it, you know, we don't think it's justified. So I think there's a fair amount of patience. But also what happens when the market plummets like this is there are forced sellers. You know, people who've got debt against things, people who've bought stuff in CFDs, where a bank tells you you have to sell the shares today. And we've seen a few instances of that. So the key theme is that people are selling without reference to valuation and are valuation agnostic. And if you can buy shares at a time when, you know, valuations always count in the medium to long term. Yeah. So if you can buy shares where, you know, the valuation looks fantastic from people who just have to sell to sort out their balance sheets, that presents a very attractive equation.
Yeah, you're actually quite right. CEO of Anchor Capital, Peter Armitage, great to have you on The Money Show. Thank you.
The Money Show. The markets.
Right, discussing there the two black swans. That's what happened with oil and also the coronavirus. And our markets this week have been really affected by it. Tato Mashiho, Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Not too bad. How are the markets doing? I mean, stabilization today. When I first clicked on my Reuters computer, I thought, hey, that looks okay. Mm. But towards the end, a little bit negative.
Well, things could always be better. Yesterday, obviously, 10% down, the fifth worst trading day in the history of U.S. equity markets. And if you consider that, obviously, it is very negative. Today, we expected a rebound. Well, I suppose market consensus was for a rebound, and you had that intraday at some point, but later on, that started to fade away. Some very troubling news coming out of the political scene with President Bolsonaro from Brazil being tested positive, and obviously, he's met with quite a few world leaders recently, including President Trump. And the implications there are obviously quite severe. So that news obviously took the steam out of the very, very brief market recovery.
Yeah, unfortunately it did. Now, but Sasol today, many people have been rooting for Sasol because this week it was a bloodbath, but today a little bit better.
Yeah, indeed. Somewhat better today. Obviously, Sasol releasing some news yesterday, trying to, I suppose, calm the market. Nothing new, which they said, but reiterating, for instance, that they have $2.5 billion with cash and credit facilities available. Current market cap plus minus $2 billion. Obviously, there's a significant amount of debt, but releasing that just to say that we're able to handle the situation. If need be, we will sell non-core assets. This is very different from the likes of, let's say, Steinhoff, EOH, where the balance sheets, at least the asset side, not as high quality. So there are assets to sell. There is cash and credit available to reduce the debt balance and, worst case scenario, a rights issue. Yeah. So the market taking that slightly positive, and obviously we've seen a rebound today.
Anybody else recover today? I mean, I saw Discovery at one point up 5%, but the rest not so much.
There were one or two which had a relatively good day, the likes of Billiton. I mean, yesterday it ended at a dividend yield of close to 16% for a large diversified miner. That is somewhat unusual, let's say, given the strong balance sheet and so on. But of course, everyone's concerned about the short term being Q1 and Q2 this year. China obviously being shut down. We've seen exports falling 17% the previous month. But obviously, when you're buying, you're looking out into the long term, and if you can get large diversified global businesses with strong balance sheets yielding 16%, then you have to, I suppose, think twice before selling.
Tato, any idea what's going on with Aspen? I think it's down about 12% today. They've had a rocky road.
Well, I suppose people are generally looking at companies with significant debt loads and saying, well, there might be a surprise there down the road. So one of the core investment principles obviously laid out by Benjamin Graham was margin of safety. And that can come in terms of your entry point in terms of price, but also what may go wrong from an operational perspective of the business in terms of the balance sheet. And we know Aspen are busy de-gearing, selling some assets to pay down debt, obviously no longer on the acquisition spree. And so you might find people saying, well, There might be there might be issues with that debt pay down going forward.
Okay, so that's what it is. Your take on what happened this week. Yesterday, it was quite phenomenal to watch, actually. Your share down 10%. Your take, what were you thinking?
Well, I suppose along with everyone else, there's just dramatic change in sentiment. And these days, with the advent of algo traders, as well as the rise of passives, you have buying for various reasons, not always based purely on fundamentals. And you just have a large increase in volatility. And we've seen the VIX, obviously, this year spiking up significantly. And that sentiment changes on a hairpin. You know, you get days which are risk on, the next day is completely risk off. And when that sentiment changes, it's very difficult to bring in rationality or to go against that trade, at least in the short term. So, yeah, we all know the fears around coronavirus. But as others have said, it's rather transitory. It will be under control at some point in time. We've already seen in China that rates of infection have been slowing on a daily rate. And towards the end of the year, you'll start to see economic recovery, recovering. But for now, nobody wants to be in equities. Everyone is selling out. Even gold and U.S. treasuries have been coming off this week. And that tells you the extent to which people are panicking. Everyone just wants cash under the mattress, so to speak.
Have you any idea what you'll be facing on Monday morning? Any idea?
Well, if I knew that with certainty, life would be quite pleasant. Unfortunately, not. One thing we do know is that there will be continued uncertainty, continued volatility. But it's times like this when you have to say to yourself, well, do I have the conviction and do I believe in whatever assets it is that I hold? And am I willing to go through the storm knowing that I'm going to come out on the other side? And we've seen many of these episodes before, whether it was the GFC 2009, whether it was Black Monday 1987. And there is always, light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. Mm. The only thing that gives me comfort is, as I've said, I believe that this is somewhat short-term focused. The news cycle today is far more rapid and just far more prevalent than it was even a decade ago with social media. And so people will be over exuberant on the upside, and they'll be overly pessimistic on the downside. So it's not a case where, bank balance sheets have been destroyed or there's massive fraud across a bunch of companies. It's the economy is going to be shut down for 6 months or so because we would rather be cautious than be sorry with regards to a new infection, which you don't understand. But once it's sorted out, things will go back to normal. Hopefully we'll go back to the business of looking at fundamentals and not worrying about sentiment as much.
Yeah, indeed. I'll chat to you Monday, Tato Mashichon, Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Great to have you on The Money Show. Thank you.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that gives you expert solutions for your transactional banking needs. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
Right, time for the best bits of The Money Show. And you need to pay attention because right after this, we got the brutal biz quiz and some of the clues will be buried within the best bits of The Money Show. So let's get it underway. South Africa must learn from the mistakes of the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic. Now, these are the views of Howard Phillips, Emeritus Professor of History at UCT. He reminded us how South Africa fared during the times of the Spanish flu.
South Africa really had a very well-developed rail system, and so large numbers of people, initially soldiers, and then subsequently people fleeing from infected centers, whether they were migrant workers, whether they were families trying to seek some kind of safety, spread the Spanish flu high, wide, and handsome. And so even into very remote parts of South Africa, the flu penetrated and then spread literally like wildfire.
I'm a firm believer in history as a great teacher. I mean, it was allowed to spread because bureaucrats didn't understand what they were facing. And I suppose the lessons we've got to learn from that today is we've got to get a really good understanding of what we are up against with COVID-19.
Absolutely. The need for very, very strict quarantine and isolation could not be clearer. That's the one of the lessons of the 1918 flu. They quite simply didn't know what they were dealing with and allowed it to spread without really having even the slightest idea of what they were dealing with.
Right, so let's talk about coronavirus, and the spread of the virus has changed the world as we know it, and there's no denying that. Bruce had a chat with Graham Codrington, a scenario planner and a founding director of strategic insights firm Tomorrow Today. He says everything has changed. This is what he said when Bruce told him the supply chain as we know it has to be different.
I think businesses and families as well. We're scheduled an all hands family meeting tomorrow evening to say, so what does
all hands but no touching?
Yes, of course, all elbows. But we basically saying, how do we as a family approach a crisis situation? This is not just a little blip. This is something where you have to imagine World War had broken out, and then you the next day you wake up and you say the world is not the same, and the world is not the same now. And so we need
people have got to have plans. If you've got small kids and they get sick and they get put into isolation, you're not going to want your kid to be going into some public public hospital in isolation. Yes. A parent is going in there with them, come hell or high water.
So
whatever that happens.
Exactly. Yeah. So what's your plan? Mm. PwC in Europe, I think every PwC office in Europe tomorrow is telling everybody to stay home. Not because they've got COVID, but to test whether they can all stay at home.
Do systems work for working from home?
Exactly. Yeah. Do a systems check, get IT. You could rather do it tomorrow or Monday and Tuesday than in a week's time or 2 weeks' time when the government tells you you're not allowed to leave your house. So these are, I think, what we've got to do. We've got to have this emergency response. The world has changed. What does that mean for us? But then also realize it's only going to be for a month or two, and then everybody will say, you know what? Everybody's got this now. Everybody is going to get it's already got it. And so we will slowly go back to normal. And again, not slowly, actually. I think April, May is lockdown. June, July is easing back into things. And then you've got to say, now what does the world look like? Because it's very different.
Interesting thoughts, those. We also spoke to New Apso Group Chief Executive Daniel Manella about the group's financial results. Bruce asked him about the outlook of that company and the local economy.
The situation that we found ourselves in and sort of the collective problems that we face in terms of the outlook is indeed quite serious, and the various elements that you've just stated go and feed into each other, and they would have been bad if we had a decent starting point. But of course, we're starting off a very low base, and that can only compound the problems that we already had.
You were on the MPC of the Reserve Bank. The US has cut rates by 50 basis points. The Bank of England has joined the party today. We've got an MPC meeting next week. I know you don't want the question, but I will ask it anyway. What would you advise if you were on the MPC next week, which you're not? But so what would your advice be? Should we see some aggressive interest rate cuts to help South Africa through its multiple crises?
Bruce, I'm sure that they could do without my advice. But I think given what we're up against and with a little bit of knowledge and history I have no doubt that our colleagues are very, very busy, very disciplined in assessing the current environment, checking out the risks, talking to their colleagues across the world to exchange views and get their assessments of what they are seeing. They're assessing the global fallout and how potentially
25 or 50 basis points next week. How big?
I won't put my head on the block there, but both possible, I think.
And then this week's Make Money Mondays was Jan Hendrik van der Westhuizen, one of two South African chefs who have a Michelin star. He's based in Venice. Most people would believe that someone like him would have had a grand upbringing, but he actually surprised Bruce.
I did not grow up comfortably at all. I was a millismos for most of my childhood. I earned R1 a bag sold from the Venter kind of little vine key. And so we kind of, as a child, it was very difficult. My studies, I remember my mother tagging the cows, a small herd of cows for my tuition fees. And as the tuition needed to be paid, she just literally got rid of a cow. So there was a, it's really, I'm not touching shoulders really with this lifestyle. I was actually thinking about that today, Bruce. It's like I'm in Nice, in the old part of Nice, and I went to Monaco last week, and I just can't get the grips of it. I think that's also a big reason why I'm going back to South Africa, opening up Clanyon, is to just to get rooted somehow.
Monaco is a weird place. It's very confined. There's an extraordinary amount of money, but you go through the streets, it doesn't feel wealthy, does it? I mean, it's got an incredible atmosphere about it. It's an incredibly
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. 70% of our clientele is from Monaco and Saint-Tropez, so I can't say bad things about the place.
They're wonderful people. Wonderful people. They're so rich.
I love Monaco. No, but it's personally for myself, I'm more of a, I'm living in the port of Nice, which is the kind of bohemian, kind of dodgy side. You get people screaming late night. And, you know, so there's kind of a realness to Nice as well, which I like.
And those are the best bits of the Money Show. So I hope you've been paying attention because it's time for the brutal biz quiz. Up for grabs, you'll be the champion. You'll just be the champion of the week. So this is how it works. I'm going to ask you a series of questions. If you are the last person standing, then you will be the champion of the week on the Money Show. You can brag to Bruce on Monday. The first question, and you need to dial me 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. The first question is, and we had it in the best bits, which 1918 influenza pandemic hit the world? What was its name? Which 1918 influenza pandemic hit the world? 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567.
The Money Show. The Brutal Biz Quiz.
Right, let's get right into it. You have to be the last person standing after a series of questions. The first question is, which 1918 influenza pandemic hit the world? So let's go to Basil. Hi, Basil. What's the answer?
Spanish flu.
Absolutely. Earlier this week, Bruce spoke to UCT Professor Howard Phillips about the impact of the Spanish flu. You would have heard that now in the best bits. Right, second question, Basil. Which organization was founded on the 7th of April, 1948, to promote global health and well-being? They've just had a press conference.
World Health Organization.
Correcting, absolutely, quite right. Now, South Africa was a founding member of the WHO in 1947. All right, question number three. Come, Basil, my money's on you. The name coronavirus is derived from the Latin corona. What does corona mean? Oh, that's a hard one.
It is brutal.
No, it doesn't. It does not mean sun. Okay, sorry about that, Basil. Hard luck. All right, Ray. Hi, Ray. Good evening. I'll say it again. The name coronavirus is derived from the Latin corona. What does corona stand for or mean? Come, Ray.
I don't know the answer.
Oh, no, Ray. I think I've stumped everybody. Wow. Okay, all right. Let's go to James. Hi, James. What does corona stand for? What does it mean?
I'm also not too sure, sorry.
Oh, wow. I think I've brutaled everyone. Okay, let's go to Lyndon. Lyndon, save me here. What does corona stand for?
It's a crown.
It does. Indeed, it does. Wow. It refers to the characteristic appearance of virus particles that have a fringe reminiscent of a royal crown or the solar corona. Lovely. Very nice. Okay, nice one. All right. So what is the term used to describe an unpredictable event that is beyond what is normally expected of a situation and has potentially severe consequences? We spoke about it earlier on today. There are two of them at the moment. They've wiped out the markets. What are they called?
Pandemic?
No. Oh, dear. Okay, this is very difficult. There are two of them. What they do is they go through the water. 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. Wilhelm, I tell you what, if you get this right, because I don't think anybody else is going to get this right, if you get this right, you are the champion of this week. What is the answer?
Black Swan.
Yes. Wilhelm, you are the champion. In fact, you can phone Bruce on Monday and just tell him I sent you and said that you're the champion. You're quite right. What are you up to this weekend?
Just
lazing around.
Supporting the Stormers, good answer. Willem, congratulations, you're the champion of this week. Yes, Black Swan, the worsening of the coronavirus and the widely unanticipated Russian assault on the oil price are both categorized by analysts as Black Swan events.